Hello there, listeners. This is Oddeye speaking, and today we have an interesting episode that's kind of been in the works for a while now here at Audible Autism. This episode is our special on social isolation and how people overcame it. You might not be hearing so much of me, only in these sort of little moments here to break things up, but you'll be hearing from about three different people's stories in regards to how they overcame their own issues. And this episode came to be because we just wanted to help people realize that they're not alone in their own problems. We wish that they're able to overcome them, and that in all due respect, they deserve more. They deserve people in their lives, and it's sort of a thing that is common and often difficult to address, that this is something that I feel is sort of a pressing issue for autistic people. And I would just like to say a big thank you to everybody who has been involved in this. So I hope you enjoy this one, and also I hope you feel educated. And for those of you who are currently suffering, I hope this enriches you sometime. In this section, we have a conversation between Sarah and our previous guest, Rebecca Cavender, who talks about her experiences, and Rebecca's points are quite enlightening. So here's what she had to say.
It keeps coming up that you have quite a lot of relationships. You have work relationships, you have familial relationships, friend relationships. And I was just wondering if you had any, anything to say if you've ever experienced that, but also if you had any advice for people about how to overcome it.
I've definitely had that, and I do have these different relationships for sure. And in terms of, living in the town that I live in, there aren't, I don't have a lot of girlfriends that I go and do things and have coffee with here. Like, I will say that, and my energy is focused on my work and my daughter, and I do have a partner who doesn't live here, and so I have strong bonds with people, but the ones I see in person, it's pretty small. And most of my friendships then too, we do them over the phone or whatever. So, but I have found a lot of, I've had that social isolation before. And I think that in terms of overcoming it, I think a lot of times the easiest way to first start to is to create online relationships and friendships with people, because there's more people actually accessible to you, and especially if you can connect with the autistic community. And I think that that's really important. And I also really want to say that I think it's really important to cultivate relationships with ourselves and to really feel, because I see a lot of, that a lot of us carry a lot of pain and wounds around maybe the way we were raised or not feeling like we quite fit in. And so to really cultivate a relationship with yourself and really learn to honor yourself. I don't want to say love yourself, because it feels a little trite, and I don't think people really know how to do that. But I think to honor and respect yourself, and a lot of that comes with learning what your boundaries are, and that self-awareness about what's good for you is a little bit too much. How can you take care of yourself? And really hold that as something really important. And then I feel like it becomes easier to extend this to other people, but that we really need to have that core within ourselves. So we don't So we feel that sense of confidence within ourselves when we are establishing relationships with others. We have some clarity around what we stand for, and we respect ourselves, so we don't want other people to take advantage of us. And then I think, you know, kind of doing this online and with the autistic community is a really safe way to start to expand and then also just go, just really listen to yourself about what works for you, because I think we're all unique, and what might work for one person won't work for another. And so maybe, you know, maybe it means creating something online, an online community yourself, where you have a support group online and that's free, and you meet with other autistics or whatever even your passions are that you're interested in. And I think that too, again, with that social isolation, if we, as autistics, if we can connect with people who have similar interests, then that really helps us have a way to communicate. We have something in common, and it, that makes it much easier. And then when you're ready to do that in person, just go at your own pace and do that the way you want to, whether that means, you know, sometimes it might be enough that you go into Starbucks and you give a compliment to the barista, you know, that you feel like, to not deny yourself the simple interactions can be just as meaningful as, let's say, you know, a barista tells you, oh, your hair looks really nice, to actually receive what they have to say and say thank you. And maybe that's enough for you that day as to have a social interaction with someone. That can be enough. And that might really lift you up and carry you for several days. And so not to, and I also, I'm probably saying so much right now, but I'm also feeling this place where sometimes when we give of ourselves, then that can help too. And I'm going to give a couple little examples that maybe people wouldn't think it's social, but I think it is. maybe not social in a traditional way. But sometimes when I'm not feeling very good, then I make a point to actually try to make others feel better. And then I feel that come back to me. So there's been times I've, kept little sticky note pads in my bag. And if I've gone into a shop or even out in public, then I leave like little notes that say, you're beautiful, or have a beautiful day. And I just like am stealth and like, I make it into this little secret adventure, and I put them different places that somebody could find. And I just have it in my heart that whoever needed to see that little message would find it. And maybe it's on the mirror in some public bathroom or at a park bench or whatever. And to me, that feels social, because I feel like I'm putting my heart out there for somebody. And, I trust that somebody will need that. And then, also even just the pay it forward thing. Like if, again, I keep using Starbucks, but like, you know, you buy a coffee and then get something for the person behind you just as an act of kindness. I think there's ways. I guess my point is that I do feel that we are all interlinked and connected in this sort of web, and that when we do an act of kindness for someone else, even if it's a stranger and we don't personally interact with them, it is a social act because it impacts them and it can impact their day and their family's day and the people that they're around, and there's this ripple effect. And so I don't think it's fair to say that's not social, because I think we're all so interlinked. And so to sometimes give yourself some credit for putting yourself out there in even sort of what people might not think is social, but is for you. And that might also help you feel this sort of expansion in your, within yourself, and more some confidence to reach out to more people and you know, in person or online. So
fantastic.
Okay, so this section is unique in that we have a listener coming in to talk about their stories for the first time. And this is coming from America. We have Miss Megan Snell here to tell her story about dealing with social isolation. So, Megan, please take it away.
Hi. So, my name is Megan Snell. I live in the Mid-Willamette Valley in Oregon in the United States. Oregon is on the West Coast. It's just above California and just below Washington State. I found out I was autistic in my mid-30s, and it was an interesting experience because I'd been very isolated my entire life, and so when I finally started to like be exposed to the world around me and other people, it just sort of hit me that I'm different. And it was quite an enlightening experience, as anybody listening could imagine, but especially an autistic person, to just, you know, be so isolated and then come into the world and like all of this information coming at you was really, really quite the experience. And So it was a shock to my system, and among other things that was going on in my life, it was just extremely like meltdown mode. And I can look back on it now and understand that that's what was happening, even though at the time I didn't know, because I didn't know I was autistic. I didn't know anything about how my brain worked. And super overwhelming at one point in time. I had a nervous breakdown, or almost a nervous breakdown. And came out of it, thank goodness. But, you know, it was a process for me when I got hit that breakdown, actually, that I actually connected with a life coach who really, really helped me sort of get the foundation of what really was the answer for me to get out of social isolation and to actually come into myself. And that process started with just looking at the wobble, so to speak, of like, you know, where we can feel unstable or unsure, or we start to feel fearful, or, you know, any kind of emotion that's attached to that, that we start to notice some sort of something is off, you know, and we, there's a fear that often we're facing, and especially with socialized. The reason we're socially isolated is because we have all of these different divergencies about us that we don't really know what to do with and how to deal with them. And so it's like, so I just started looking at them and taking away the judgment that our culture, our society had put on them, and in the definition that our society had put on them. And I started coming up with my own definitions of like, this is why I am the way that I am. It's like I started rewriting my own program. I just went back through and was like, no, these codes aren't working. This isn't for me. Like, no, but that is not right. I'm not taking that on. That's not why I did that. That's not who I am. Like, just kind of just start rewriting my code, you know? And I think any autistic hearing can understand what I mean. Like, we're max in a PC world. And everybody's put a bunch of PC stuff on us, and we are like, you know, that doesn't work for us. That just doesn't work for us. And so I'm going back through and like deprogramming all of that stuff and just saying, okay, let's look at it for real. Why am I the way that I am? And, you know, even down to the hurt and the pain and the wounds and the fears and all of that kind of stuff, and looking at it and like, where does that come from? And healing that, and by telling myself, you know what, this is legitimate. I'm here. This is what I'm feeling. This is who I am. This is what's happened to me in my life. And, you know, and then I look at the neurodivergency aspect of it and be like, And a lot of it had to do with my neurodivergency. I'm a very trusting person. A lot of wounds came out of that, etc. And so I just began to look at my brain that way and my brain function that way, and realizing that, yeah, I am different. And I began to accept it and enjoy it and love it and find the gift in it, find the strength in it, and use that to make my life happy and to be like, you know what, if I'm okay with me, if I know who I am and I understand who I am and I know how my brain works, I know how my body works, I know me, then you know what, I'm going to just go and be me around this world, and I'm going to have my own experience and I'm going to enjoy it. Because this is me, and there's only, and I know it's so cliche, but there's only one of me. There's only the me having this experience for me, and that's all that matters, right? You're the only one having your own experience. Nobody else is having your experience. So, like, really, the whole, everything I did around, everything I did with my mind and changing my thinking and, you know, becoming less socially isolated or not feeling that loneliness or that separation anymore is really what it is, just had to do with me, like, with, on the premise that I am the only me. And I get to have my own unique experience. It's my own universe, essentially. I'm the god of my own universe. I'm the queen of my realm. And this is my experience that I get to have. This is it. This is my one experience. And so I just kind of like made it my joy to just be me, to just be who I am, and to use my mind the way that it was designed to be used, and to demonstrate it the way it was designed to be demonstrated, and let that be, and let my freak flag fly, because I'm weird. I'm different. I'm extremely intelligent. I see things that most people don't see. I understand things most people don't understand. I see through people. I mean, like, these are, and by see through people, I mean, like, you know, people trying to be fake and people trying to, like, I see people's pain and I see people's, you know, I love deeply. So these are my superpowers. And these are the powers that I chose to, like, allow to grow, and then also recognize there's things that I cannot do. At the other side of that spectrum, there's things that I cannot do. And I became okay with it. In fact, recognize that those were also, whenever we feel into them, become also our strengths. Because they can be a strength in another way. So it's like, and it's okay to just have those weaknesses, because it's all good. It's all meant to be in balance. And so when I just started realizing these things about myself, I became more accepting of myself. And in becoming more accepting of myself, it just made me feel like I was in a world that I was welcome in. Because I was in a world in my mind that I was welcome in. So it was like getting to know who I am, accept and even love who that person is, and see how this unique creation that life has designed in me gets to experience itself. Life gets to experience itself through me, and how, what a unique signature it brings. It's got its own unique vibration, its own unique signature, and I get to experience that. And I was like, you know what? So it almost became like irrelevant whether somebody's judgment of me was accepting or unaccepting. I am an indigenous inhabitant of this planet. I am a child of this earth. I am a star seed. You know, I come from stardust. And here I am. And I am absolutely belong here. Because I exist means I belong, and that I am from the ethos of time, and even before, this is where I come from, and I belong here. and I am unique. I am different. But that's because life has a purpose for me. There's a purpose, and we're in an ecosystem, and I've come along to be a part of that ecosystem, and that ecosystem needs me. It needs me to survive. And I need it. It's cohabitation. And I just realized, you know, so it takes me out of being isolated socially. I still don't like to be around people very much. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think what I see with a lot of autistics is that some of their social isolation, and I don't speak for all autistics, but what I've seen is like, it's not so much the need to be around people, although it is for some. For many, it's also, I mean, maybe even more so just about feeling so lonely or not liking who they are or wishing they would be something that was fitting in better in our society. And I get it. I wish I fit in better a lot of the time. But what keeps me, I guess, kind of from going over the edge in that, and what keeps me more secure and being able to not feel socially isolated, is really just accepting who I am, because I've always got me. And ironically, once that happens, I was able to actually, you know, interact with more people and actually become less socially isolated, because I was not isolating myself from myself, if that makes sense. I was just fully accepting me and allowing myself to flourish and not holding myself back and letting myself be who I am in this world in my unique way that I am. And I realized that it's different for every person. And I'm not going to speak every person's experience. And I know there's a lot of people that really, really suffer. And their story's going to sound different than mine. But I just, you know, and that's their story to tell. But this is my story. And if anybody can relate to it, or if I can help anybody, I'm happy to. And to share my method, you know, of how I did it. And just coming into at one-ment sort of with myself, into oneness. Because I feel like in at one-ment, I say that word, it's a word atonement. But at one-ment, we're atoned. We've atoned for ourselves, so to speak. We've atoned. We've come into oneness. So it's like irrelevant that we, you know, belonging is real. If not belonging becomes irrelevant. Anyway, so that's where I'm coming from. That's how I see it. And I'm happy to share it with people who are wanting to listen.
At this point, we have our other returning guest, Ted Rogers, who decided to tell his story in dealing it and how he got over and how he tried to help other people in his own way possible. So take it away, Ted.
Hi, I'm Ted, and I'm going to share some thoughts about isolation. I've been trying to get my head around this because, as someone who is Asperger's, I think often isolation comes with a negative connotation, and I think sometimes it can be negative and cause problems, but also, for me, the key to isolation in some ways is to learn how to enjoy it, or to learn how to find peace with yourself. Because if you find peace with yourself, then isolation is less like a sentence and more of a choice. And that's interesting. And for me, I guess that would be where isolation becomes solitude. And for me, solitude is beautiful. It's rare. It's something that I think a lot of people in society, in jobs, in work, in scenes or social groups often don't get enough of. And solitude for me is a space where I can really think about the things I like to think about, which for me is often philosophy or how the world works, or things that I could do to change systems, or, you know, stuff sort of like issues that aren't just domestic issues that are things that as a human at base I really want to reflect on. So for me, in that sense, isolation is almost necessary, because if you're not isolated, I find myself being easily distracted and sort of fill my brain up with information that is overwhelming or useless, or both, which is the worst. So for me, in that sense, yeah, solitude is really important, and it's not a problem, and it's something I value, and it's something I often crave. By profession, I'm a dancer, although I'm also trying to shift this into writing, actually, so that I can have a bit more solitude. But as a dancer, I don't get much solitude, so I crave it when I'm not dancing and when I have free time. I guess at some point as well, though, isolation can be a big issue, and it can lead to loneliness. And I've had long periods for sure of feeling really lonely. I've actually felt more isolated within groups than I have on my own, and that's unusual sometimes, because I think sometimes we think of isolation as you physically being on your own. But for me, often isolation happens at a dinner party, or at a work meeting, or even just on the street, where it feels to me like everyone else is thinking one thing and I'm thinking something else. And for me, perhaps this is one of the biggest challenges of isolation, is the fear and anxiety that surrounds feeling so different in a social situation. I don't think it's necessarily to do with my Asperger's. I mean, maybe it is, but also I think it's just because I like to think on a deep level, and I'm not that interested in small talk. And I think a lot of people function on small talk. Small talk is like the route into the deeper thing, whereas for me, I'm not afraid to go straight to the deep thing, but I guess that ignores the fact that maybe the majority of people are too afraid to go straight to the deep thing. So I can often find myself feeling isolated in a social situation, probably more likely in a social situation that I feel like I need to go out of duty, you know, like Christmas or like a, I don't know, some sort of networking event or some sort of party or, you know, something that I wouldn't necessarily choose to go to. Whereas if I had chosen to go to it, I would probably have chosen because I'd feel more comfortable with it. For example, I went to a cello performance the other night, and there was only maybe 15 people in the crowd, and it was my friend playing cello, and it was in a venue that I knew, so I felt very comfortable going there. I went on my own, I didn't go with my partner, and I felt very comfortable with that, and actually, it meant that I felt a bit braver to interact with people. I wanted to see the concert, so that gave me a familiar point to lead in with conversation. And I spoke to a few people before the concert began. Whereas if I was at a club night or a bigger party, I think that I struggled to engage with anyone for too long. Also because like the situation just isn't right for conversation with any depth. It's more just like, hi, oh my God, you look fab. You know, it's not like, it's not really the situation to be engaging in a conversation. So yeah, I guess perhaps I feel more isolated when I feel like I can't engage properly in a conversation. Another difficulty with isolation, perhaps, is its physical effects. So I can find myself, when I am feeling isolated, particularly sort of publicly isolated, like I've already said, if isolated within a group of people, my body sort of shuts down and I feel tension in my shoulders and you know, my gaze, instead of being like chest open, sort of everything curves in and caves in. And that can be a real challenge. I've also found it in cases of conflict. You know, if I feel like a conversation isn't going well, or if I'm arguing, probably most likely with my partner, but, you know, arguing anywhere, my body reacts. And that, for me, is one of the most devastating effects of isolation. And I guess I mentioned earlier that I'm a dancer, and for me, working on my body, and other physical therapies too, but working on my body has helped me to bring myself out of isolation. And almost because I appear more open when I've worked on my body, it means that other people want to approach me again, because I don't have the look of someone who is crippled by isolation. You know, and I think people are scared to approach someone if they are looking vulnerable in that way. I mean, talking about dance a bit, I've danced since I was 3. I'm 27 now, so that's quite a long time. So for me, that has definitely been an advantageous thing that I have been doing for a long time. And to have that practice with my body can be so beneficial, especially because it doesn't require words. You know, and sometimes words, we're lost for words, or we don't want to talk, or we don't want to engage our brain in that way. Whereas using our body is sometimes quite a separate way to engage our brain or to start something. You know, we can sort of start from our head, start from our mouth, or we can start from our body. And I think if I've got time to sort of warm my body up, then I feel stronger and perhaps more able to engage. For example, at a party or at a club, if I can like push myself right into the middle of the dance floor, and preferably it would be full, but I have also livened up some dead dance floors, but if I can work my body and shake it out and start to feel warm, start to get the blood pulsing through everything, start to feel my muscles relax, start to be able to focus in on the beat or the music, or yeah, really focus in on the music, especially if the music's good, then I find that an amazing place to initiate an energy from. And I think that when I'm dancing, other people enjoy that too, and then they want to dance. So that in turn is a way to reduce isolation or to communicate with people in a non-verbal way. And I guess for me that reduces a lot of awkwardness. I could almost small talk in movement better than I could small talk with words. And it's entertaining as well. So like I said, people enjoy it and they want to engage with it. You know, I can love parties. I can love performing and I guess movement for me is almost, I'm almost more confident with my movement in terms of engaging with people and groups and humanity than I am not engaging my movement and having to start with my words. And I think in a private sense, it's good to have a physical practice because it helps me to be present in my own life, sort of in the moment and in the day, whether that's dance or yoga or stretching or even just sort of having a meditation or writing in a book or, you know, lying on your back in the morning, something that reminds you that your body exists. Maybe even running, physical exercise, going to the gym, any of these things for me, I do regularly and they benefit me. They benefit my brain. They benefit my awareness of my own body. And they benefit my energy levels. So that is key in breaking isolation. If I'm depressed and really struggling, I tend to not want to move. I tend to want to hide. I tend to want to like curl up and not see anyone. You know, I want to shut all the doors. Whereas if I find a way to exercise, preferably the easiest and most accessible one, because if anything's complicated, it's just going to make it harder for me to get on with it. So often for me, it's running, because you can literally put on the crappiest clothes and leave the house and you've started running. At least for me, because I live near the sea and it's very easy for me to get to long stretches of clear path or whatever beach, whatever I need to run on. But yeah, for sure, like physical movement and being able to feel your fingers and being able to feel your legs, even like if you've exercised hard and then your muscles ache afterwards, that brings you into your body. It brings you into your own life. Whereas often I can feel my brain disappearing off into like the 10th realm. You know, I could probably like sit in one spot and have gone on the wildest brain journey. And sometimes life needs to be less complicated than that in order for me to just remember where I am, be grateful, have some acceptance over my situation instead of always dreaming about what could be or trying to fix things in my brain or trying to solve problems. You know, sometimes I just need to get back to some sort of zero, and physical exercise can definitely do that for me. I think isolation is prevalent in the Aspie community because of how we're wired. You know, we are wired differently perhaps to the majority of people, but I also think that's an excellent thing. I really enjoy being on my brain level. I really enjoy having strong focus on subjects. I really enjoy being straight to the point. I find it a very efficient way to live often, and I find it means that you get to cut out a lot of the crap that most people spend years trying to overcome. But I also can understand how isolation does lead to feelings of loneliness. I guess if I had any advice, it would just be that if you have a good friend, you know, make sure you reach out to them and stay connected. I often have to remind myself that it's important to nurture relationships that matter to me. You know, if I have a thought about a person, I'll send them a text and just say, I'm thinking of you, or, you know, do you want to have a phone call? Or, you know, phone calls are great. Like, actually speaking with voices is great. And often it only really takes me one or two people to be connected to help me feel like I'm not completely inside my own head. I don't think we have to throw ourselves into big social situations or events or chats or whatever to bring ourselves out of isolation. I think you know, they're quite extreme measures. And as I said earlier, that could possibly throw you into a bigger isolation. Whereas just doing something that is comfortable for you, and like I said, a physical practice too, if you can do a bit of exercise and text a couple of friends, maybe have a tea or a coffee with one of them, one-on-one, you know, that can help bring you out of isolation. And finally, like I said earlier, also to learn how to completely soak up the luxury of isolation, especially when it becomes solitude. It's so rare that most people get to experience that. And if you're able to be with yourself, this is also something that other people really struggle with. And for me, I get such power from it. I get such power, you know, and I've had a tricky life too. I've, you know, I had really terrible teenage years. I've undergone a lot of abuse, and it's not been a straightforward journey to having work or having a home. However, when I've been on my own, and thanks to the help of other loving people as well, I've learned to sit with myself. I've learned to be okay with myself. I've learned to take responsibility for my actions. And, you know, that's also a positive thing, taking responsibility for your life in the way that you want to live it as well, putting things in place for the life that you want to live. If you can sit with yourself, you know, there's so much that you could do as an individual, or at least it makes me feel like I can do a lot, you know, and I've got this rare, beautiful time to be with nature, to really enjoy a smell, to really, like, you know, stare at a candle and just think about that flame, or even a bit of internet shopping, you know, which can also be a bit overwhelming. But whatever it is, I know that if I'm on my own in my solitude, I can really learn to enjoy that thing sensorily and fully. And for me, that's an excellent thing with isolation. If we're going to be isolated, you know, we really, really should learn how to enjoy it, because it can be a beautiful thing.
And with that, I would just like to say thank you to everybody who took part in this episode. And for those of you listening, we hope that this helped in some way, that this is a way of showing that you're not alone in the world. There are various ways that you can look to improve yourself and be around like-minded people who are also in similar situations to you. This is partially what the Autistic Empire is for, and what we would like to change, especially for autistic adults. And if you think that might help, then give the website a look and check to become a member. For our previous episodes, they are all on iTunes and every other space where podcasts are uploaded, but we are also now on Spotify, for those of you who prefer streaming. If you would like to be a guest on the episode, then feel free to fill in the questionnaire, as we will look through and try and get back to you about becoming a guest for the next season. So that's everything, and until next time, thank you.
If you'd like to stay in touch with us, you can check out our website at www.audibleautism.com. for links to things discussed in the episode and for our back archive. You can subscribe to us on most podcast distribution platforms, including iTunes. Just search for Audible Autism. This podcast is part of a larger project, the Autistic Empire, which is aiming to create an autistic community centered around our interests as autistic people. You can check us out at www.autisticempire.com. We post all of Audible Autism's episodes to our Autistic Empire channels, so you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and we're even on Pinterest. Just search Autistic Empire to receive news and updates. We also have a forum where enrolled citizens can discuss the latest episodes and other issues of interest to autistic people, so do check that out as well. If you have any questions or would like to get in touch with us to be on a future episode of Audible Autism, you can always email us at team@audibleautism.com. Thank you for listening.